From beach towels to tea towels, and from mugs to water bottles, the TNT Shop has it all. Browse our shop now at tntradio.live. Mike Tennessee and Richard Carson are politically incorrect. Today's News Talk, TNT, TNT Radio.
And good morning, good afternoon, good evening, and good night, wherever you may be, all around the world. You're listening to Politically Incorrect. I'm Mike Tennessee. Normally, I'd have my dear old friend, Richard Carson, with me. Unfortunately, Richard's been detained this afternoon, or this morning, or good night, wherever you may be. But we've got some very special things to talk about, and my very special guest today is Matilda Borden. Matilda, it comes from Adelaide in South Australia. She is a forensic social worker with about 30 years experience specializing in complex and compounding psychological and psychosocial barriers, including things such as child protection, homelessness, poverty, and disabilities, all the very serious things that are around us, not just where I am, but where everybody is at the moment. Now, a couple of other things I want to tell you about Matilda. She's a former National Secretary of Whistleblowers Australia. That organisation has been a tireless champion of social justice causes, and Matilda has dedicated her life to ensuring integrity and transparency in public office and public sector accountability. She's featured in local, national, and international news media for her passionate work in defending human rights of the most vulnerable and disenfranchised members of society, and was featured recently in an insight program run by SBS Television in Australia called Bullies at Work, exposing corruption at the highest levels of government and other places, including courtrooms, in the form of a scheme critical list. Now, I could go on forever with your bio, Matilda. There's a lot to talk about. But I thought, rather than just talk about you, because people can Google you and find out all about you, we'd talk about something a bit interesting this afternoon, something which I don't know a lot about, but I think you do. And it's about something that's called smart cities. Now, tell us a little bit about what I'm talking about when I mention smart cities.
Well, smart cities is, I think, something that's relatively new to probably the vast majority of the population all over the globe. But as we see in the UK, is it Oxfordshire? I can't remember which place it is, where they've already started rolling out the, 15, 20 minute cities concept, traffic restrictions, you got to get passes to go from one side of the city to the next, et cetera. We're just starting to learn how it's being rolled out here in Australia. And obviously Victoria seems to be spearheading that, that pathway, if you like. We're already hearing that in Victoria, they're on, 20-minute cities in Victoria? And I think in Ballarat, I also thought Geelong was in amongst that, but I'm not sure about Geelong. The jury's out on that one, but I heard Ballarat's in 10-minute, working down to 10-minute cities. The world's gone crazy.
Yes, well, Matilda, I've got a smartphone. Is that the same smart we talk about when we're talking about smart cities? Is it depending upon technology? Does it mean that
it's totally
in order to enforce this limitation on where and when you can go from one place to another?
Yes.
They and I say they being in what you've just talked about, a council can actually track you.
Absolutely. Absolutely, and don't think they won't. They're rolling out things, for example, like smart cameras, all for your safety and protection, of course. Mm. But these cameras aren't just cameras that, let's say we'll take a photograph of your face and, it'll be stored away somewhere innocuous that probably nobody's ever going to look at unless somebody makes a police report. This stuff is going to be uploaded into the cyberspace, into the cloud, whatever, probably sent overseas. It'll probably be stored in an overseas database somewhere, potentially China, but not necessarily exclusively China. We don't know. And therein lies your problem, because we actually don't know. We don't know anything because we're not being told enough, and you're not allowed to ask questions.
Well, you've obviously asked some questions, though, haven't you?
Well, I have a whole bunch of people. I'm one of a large group of people, if you like, involved in an organisation that we're calling the No Smart Cities Action Group, or NOSCAG. We just kind of came together as a group of concerned citizens to start asking those questions, you know, and the more we ask, the more questions we have. We're not getting an awful lot of answers, and there's an awful lot of a lot of our questions are being dismissed. Oh, you don't have to worry about that. Oh, no, there's nothing sinister in this. You know, you're just all being conspiracy theorists. But the truth of the matter is that we're not actually getting answers to the questions that we have.
Who's behind this?
Well, in South Australia, it's pretty obvious that the local government association is, but obviously, you know, who's pulling their strings? Heaven only knows. I mean, I haven't worked my way through that quagmire of relationships, and I think probably incestuous relationships, I would suggest, you know, whether it's business or financial or whatever. But there are some very serious globalist, I think, aspirations working its way through the local government association. If you go to our LGA website, you will see a ton of information about the World Economic Forum and the United Nations, and you know, from things like climate change to digital strategies and all sorts of things. It's actually saturated in the World Economic Forum UN agendas.
Well, from what you've told me, it seems that some of our councils want to concentrate power over all of us, assuming that some of us are within their local government areas. And it really is the case, isn't it, that
absolutely,
we then become in the hands of a tiny influential group of people.
That cannot be held accountable.
Well, I mean, in some cases, as we've known, some people have been found to be corrupt. I'm not saying all councillors are corrupt, but there have been cases in which one or other councillors have been found to be corrupt.
Well, that's exactly right.
In various parts of the world.
That's exactly right. And you only need one or so.
So really our privacy must be at risk.
Bank on it. Absolutely. And, you know, it's not just the question of privacy. It's, you know, your movements. You'll have so many restrictions placed on you. And I don't know if you ever listened to Dan Bongino, actually, just to slightly digress, because one of the things that he talks about every so often is this notion of, quote, there is no power in yes. Now, don't ask me the origins of this, because it's been a long time since I listened to one of those podcasts. But the concept being that if you have to ask for permission from an authority, whether it's council, whether it's a government department, a minister, whatever, if the answer to your question is always yes, well, there's no power in it, and there's no money that needs to be exchanged. Can I have my freedom? Well, you're a free man. Oh, thank you very much. I can just go wherever I want. But if I have to ask you for permission and I'm relying on you to say yes, well, you can say, well, not today, you can't. Well, what would it take, Mike, for me to, you know, cross over to the next city or cross the border or move from point A to point B? Well, you know, you'll have to pay me a pass, right? There's a $20 pass, let's say. You'll have to go and buy that. And then I'll say yes. So there's no money that's changing hands when you actually say no. If your answer to, you know, to my question is, sorry, I beg your pardon, in reverse. If I ask you, can I move freely? And you say yes, you have no power, but you can say no, and then I have to pay you. And this is how it's going to work. Smart cities guaranteed will be all about not just the carrot, but there'll be plenty of stick and there'll be plenty of punishment. You will learn to comply. You will have your social credit score or digital ID. Everything will be linked, and it will go hand in glove. It won't be one or the other. It won't be just the Internet of Things with no consequences. There will be consequences, and plenty of them.
So you've said that this has started to emerge in the state of Victoria. How far ahead has it got to?
I honestly don't know how far, but from all I'm reading, it's probably more advanced than what we are here in Adelaide, and that's only for the time being. That doesn't mean we couldn't, you know, change things at the break of knots if we had to overnight. But certainly it appears Victoria is spearheading the way, and it's so open and it's almost boastful.
That was the state here in Australia, bearing in mind we've got listeners from all over the world. That was the state, like many states and in other countries, lockdowns occurred, really quite regulated during the course of the pandemic from when it started. So it's good at regulating that particular state.
Absolutely. And we've learned that the councils have been an important part of that mechanism that locked everybody down. Councils are an important part of it. Not the least of which is also, you know, you've got your vaccination programs happening through the council. You know, if we're going to go down the path of vaccine passports, we're going to go digital ID, we're going to go the whole nine yards, lock, stock and barrel.
Is it a conspiracy theory, this idea of smart cities?
Not anymore. I mean, they're pretty open about it. Yeah, they're boastful about it, you know.
The theory part's probably gone, but is it a conspiracy? In other words, is it a conspiracy to effectively control the lives of people
It's probably moved beyond just a, quote, conspiracy. It's probably business now. It's commercial. It's business. Everyone's going to be making money on it.
And who tell us more, because you've investigated this whole thing. Tell us how people can make money out of it.
Oh, well, you can be providing all sorts of goods and services, couldn't you? Infrastructure, you can be setting up companies. Well, I mean, for example, we're going to have a company manufacturing lithium batteries and things like that in our council area. And, of course, now having made mention of it in council meetings, everything else is going to now be confidential. So we're not going to have access to the information about what this company is going to be doing. It's a graphite company, if I'm not mistaken. I can find you all those details a little bit later on if you like, but it'll be manufacturing graphite products. Well, is it only graphite, or are we producing other things? What's the environmental impact of that? Well, nobody's going to be allowed to know, because it's all going to be confidential.
Well, yes, until people like yourself start asking questions, and then if you're able to back people into a corner where they're enforced to answer the question.
Yeah, I think you know, we're dealing with a degree of arrogance. You know, with this World Economic Forum, United Nations Great Reset, you know, it's the public-private partnership, and I use the word loosely, because it's basically going to be predominantly corporate interests that are going to be served by this. Forget the public. Stakeholder capitalism. Isn't it? Stakeholder capitalism? You and I, as ordinary private citizens, we're not one of the stakeholders.
No, it's sort of the jargon without the meaning, isn't it?
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. That's right.
Now, I just want to ask you something else along the lines of the questions about myths and facts about smart cities. Have councils actually consulted with local residents about this whole idea?
Absolutely not. Absolutely not. Now, we've got our deputy mayor for the city of Salisbury, Chad Buchanan, was heard in a public council meeting suggesting that, seeing as there are only two councillors on this council that actually oppose smart cities vigorously, that evidence of the consultation process was the fact that 13 out of the 15 got elected. And there's your public consultation process. Of course, none of those 13 actually ever ran on the topic of smart cities or anything of that type.
Well, the trouble is, isn't it? They're sort of pseudo-politicians, I suppose.
Absolutely. Of course
they are. And when you talk about politicians, as we've done on many occasions on this program, they're the last people to actually know what they're talking about.
Ain't that the truth? Ain't that the truth?
Well, there you are. Now, Matilda, we're going to go to a short break now for a couple of minutes. So if you hang fire,
sure.
We can come back as soon as we've listened to some advertisements.
Lovely.
TNT Radio's Chris Smith.
The latest policy stance delivered by Florida Governor Ron DeSantis this week on Ukraine. Now, this will upset the mainstream. He does not want the United States to keep funding Ukraine's defense against Russia's invasion. Now, given the fact that he's got a good chance of becoming the next president, this is quite significant. He will withdraw aid to Ukraine. Now, before you all kick up a stink, I agree with DeSantis, because it's Europe not the United States, which should be pitching in the most, and they are not. What is wrong with many of these European giants? It is in their backyard. It's not in the backyard of the United States. It's certainly not in the backyard of Australia. They always leave it to the United States to mop up their mess. Well, if they couldn't contain Vladimir Putin, and I think that's fair enough when it comes to France, they should do and carry the greatest weight in their support for Ukraine. Interesting comments from Ron DeSantis.
Chris Smith on TNT Radio.
A deadly virus emanating from Wuhan, China is sweeping across the globe.
Something is off.
The disease caused by the novel coronavirus has been titled COVID-19.
What we're being told doesn't add up.
It's so important in this crisis that we're in.
Congress passes a multi-billion dollar bill that will bring...
There is no cure, no way to treat this illness. All we can do is wait for a vaccine.
All we can do is wait for a vaccine.
There must be a doctor out there who's questioning this.
I'm Dr. Peter McCullough. I'm the vice chairman of internal medicine.
The only chance to reduce the risks of hospitalization is early home treatment. We can beat this pandemic.
Patients actually think the virus is untreatable. There's such a focus on the vaccine. Where's the focus on people sick right now?
The pressure to suppress any hope of treatment is extraordinary.
Why the single-minded focus on the vaccine? What is that? What is that about?
That's really going to be the goal of investigative reporters to figure this out.
Unprecedented lockdowns, devastating economic damage, huge violations of personal freedom, families separated from their loved ones, all in the name of a medical emergency.
Things won't go back to truly normal until we have a vaccine that we've gotten out to the entire world.
The hope we have of protecting our communities is to get a needle in every arm.
I am not going to follow what you are suggesting and let the virus slaughter my patients.
John, I'm watching what's happening. This is a treatable illness.
I don't think this is a matter of academic debate and confusion. What the evidence shows is that this is an organized criminal enterprise. They call this a business opportunity.
People need to know the truth.
We are witnessing the greatest organized crime in history, to the tune of trillions of dollars.
The biopharmaceutical complex is using censorship, propaganda, and manipulation to keep people living in fear. But what we need now is courage.
The Courage to Face COVID-19. Available at CourageToFaceCovid.com.
Now I want to say this, and I'm going to say it just once.
This is today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
And here we are, back again on Politically Incorrect. Our special guest this afternoon is Matilda Borden. Matilda, before the break, and it's interesting, some of the things, I don't know if you were able to listen, but I listened to something that was being said during that break, some of those notices. What do you think? How much conspiracy and how much graft and corruption is tied up with this whole idea of smart cities?
Okay. I can't say I know of corruption, but it sure as hell smells pretty foul. There is something really not right with the way they're going about the rollout, the lack of transparency and the lack of honesty and integrity when people ask questions, or when you get councillors, for example, like councillors Severina Berner and Grace Borden, who tried to move a motion reaffirming the constitutional rights and civil liberties of local residents to make sure that council won't trespass on them. That motion and that those motions were not allowed to even be put up to the vote. Okay, why would you have a problem with that? Unless, of course, you don't intend to respect those civil rights and liberties and constitutional, I guess, human rights.
But we're talking about a group of people who are councillors in terms of what you're talking about in a specific area, a local government area, in which there are a certain number of councillors who are elected by local people to be, in effect, their governors.
Yes.
In other words, to govern their way of life within their local government area.
That's right.
And what you're saying is that they don't want to tell people what they're doing. Is it a case that they don't want to tell, or they just don't know what they're doing? Or
I think it's a combination of both. I think you've got an awful lot of people who are happy to sit on council and appear to be contributing something of value, but almost entirely the council votes in unison. They all vote yes when the deputy mayor or the mayor put their hand up for yes. I know the mayor doesn't vote, but when there is a positive thing to be had, one person puts their hand up, everybody puts their hand up. Do you know what I mean? And there's
witnessed this, haven't you?
Absolutely.
You've been involved at council meetings.
Well, I'm related to two of the council members on the city of Salisbury. They're the only two dissenting council members from the rest of the council. And I'm telling you, there is very little scrutiny that goes on in terms of the things that go before council on the minutes. Okay, there's very, very little scrutiny, if any at all. And then, of course, when you've got, people like Severina Berner and Grace Borden asking questions, they get abused and bullied and harassed and defamed, slandered, you name it, with all sorts of ridiculous, absurd accusations. And it's all done very, very publicly. So there's, and I guess that's the pressure that you put up with if you dissent with the way things are going on in council. If there is a question or concern that you have to raise to cast a little bit of transparency or to open up a little bit of public debate, forget it. It ain't going to happen.
No. But you're no newcomer to a bit of controversy. And, in fact, you have been a victim. Some time ago, you were a victim of a malicious and what you would call, I suspect, fraudulent persecution campaign by the National Disability Insurance Scheme Quality and Safeguards Commission and the Health and Community Service Complaints Commission.
Because I dared to express a certain point of view. Incidentally, the issue at stake was actually only a very specific issue concerning a specific client in a particular circumstance. But anyway, it's a bit of a long story. But you can get my open letter reply to those claims and accusations. It's just absurd.
Yes.
And I'm labelled a health service provider, even though I don't provide health services. But hey, when you've got that level of corruption going on, what are you going to do? Do you know what I mean?
You yourself know that you're going to get persecuted. But the point is that you have raised these issues. It becomes in the public arena.
That's right.
Something that's talked about, so it does some good.
Well, you see, this is the point that I've always tried to make, and I don't care how much I'm defamed. I really don't care one iota anymore. As far as I'm concerned, the intention of those authorities was to hold my scalp up and to point at this person. This is what happens to you when you speak out. Whether it's against COVID or mandates or masks, it doesn't matter what. Here is what happens to you. Well, that's fine. That's fine because people can see what's going on. And I'm going to make sure you're going to hold me up as an example. I'll be the example you didn't expect.
Yeah. Now, give us a good example of what you're likely to take on in the near future.
Look, I am not just myself, and I'm not intending to sound boastful here, but I'm working with a group of community leaders that are really passionate about freedom and liberty and, the Constitution and all those things that matter to us, and we are organising NOSCAG, and I'll call them NOSCAG groups. I mean, it's a loose collective of people, and we're looking for each council area to have its own group. And we can start holding these people accountable. It doesn't have to rely on just two dissenting councillors on council, because guess what? There is people power. And these people can ask you questions and you will be held accountable. Refusing to answer a freedom of information won't get you off the hook. Do you know what I mean? Refusing to be open and transparent. You don't want to hold community consultations? That's fine. We'll hold our own.
So set up a quasi inquiry of your own, publish your own findings,
exactly,
and then set them up against what you're being told.
Exactly. Exactly. And I'll give you an example. During the local government elections back in November, I was reprimanded in an email from Rudy Greco, Deco, one of the general managers in the city of Salisbury, for posting. I'd made the assertion that City of Salisbury had signed up for net zero, right? He sent me an email that basically said, under this section of the Electoral Commission Act, blah, 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 you know, I've been spreading disinformation or misinformation or something or other, that there's a penalty that applies for false or misleading statements. And he asserts that the City of Salisbury did not sign up for net zero. Well, I don't know how you can sign up to a climate change emergency and not have net zero. And then lo and behold, just a couple of weeks ago, we find out that, yes, City of Salisbury has signed up for net zero, and it's all through their strategies, their reports, their was it digital strategy, climate emergency documents, you name it. It's all there. It's all there. The truth of the matter is they knew back then. This is not new. This was not, this didn't just drop on their desk in February, right? And you would have to be an absolute imbecile not to know that when the climate change emergency was declared in City of Salisbury, incidentally, 3 years before the state of South Australia even declared it, 3 years before any of us even knew who Klaus Schwab was, 3 years before we even knew what the Great Reset was, our Deputy Mayor Chad Buchanan declared a climate emergency in the City of Salisbury. Okay? Now, are you telling me that when City of Salisbury in 2019 declared a climate change emergency, that they weren't already planning net zero? You'd be an absolute imbecile to think that that was just an accident or a coincidence.
It's very difficult to swallow that pill, isn't it?
Of course. But you see, this is only a small smidgen of the many, many, many lies we are being told, or deceptions. You know, so they don't have to tell you a lie. They only have to deceive you by not telling you the truth.
Well, very often, as we know, they don't like answering questions, and they usually answer a question in a way which doesn't answer it.
Exactly.
So there's nothing new about that.
That's
and,
right.
I mean, you can cloud that with just about all politicians, really.
Of course.
So taking it onto a larger scale, what do you see as the most alarming trend at the moment in this regard, as far as not getting answers from people you should be getting answers from, and about what? What do you see as the most alarming feature that's coming our way?
Well, is that not really corruption? If you are entitled, if we're talking about, let's say, councils, let's just focus on councils, and you're talking about, on the one hand, on their website, oh, you know, transparency and accountability. Well, look, seriously, what a joke. What a joke. Because the first thing that council does when we start raising questions about smart cities is the mayor locks us out of the council building. Okay, before we had free and easy access to council meetings, and you didn't have to go through any particular stringent security measures. The moment we had a public gathering outside the council offices, the mayor calls in a dozen police at the time of the meeting, 2 days straight. Incidentally, in City of Salisbury, you take away a dozen police, there's almost nobody on patrol. There's almost no one on the streets. Okay. And then the council introduces a policy that requires now everybody to put their name, address, email, contact, mobile phone number, and a photograph of your face, and you're QR coded, and you wear a QR code on your person to enter the council building, and they only allow 20 people now to witness council proceedings. Oh, and they don't video and audio record. Or they might. But it's the luck of the draw. They might, but they might not. And if they do, you don't necessarily have access to it on their website. So much for transparency. What do you reckon, Mike?
Well, I think that's for your benefit, isn't it?
They've done
that because of you.
Mike, I'm so grateful that they are protecting everybody from me. protecting me from everybody else. I'm not sure which. I mean, seriously, Mike, this is the level of accountability. And quite frankly, when you have to move to those measures, I'm sorry, but what you are doing is probably dishonest. And I'm going to hedge a bet it's probably illegal. It's probably unconstitutional. And you probably have no business doing it.
No, the reality is that, unfortunately, some of the people you're talking about don't understand what it is that you're actually talking about.
You know, Mike, if it was simply a case of, for example, again, I'm not new to this entire smart cities debate and discussion, but let's hypothetically say I managed to get myself onto some sort of panel, let's say, to discuss the rollout of smart cities. It's new. I make some mistakes. I make some poor judgments, whatever. But in a discussion, you and I, between us, we might have a very heated exchange about pros and cons, and I might come to the persuasion of, yep, Mike, sorry, you were right. Maybe we should slow things down. Maybe we should look a little bit further into the contracts, for example, for these cameras. Who has control of the footage or the surveillance footage of these cameras? Where does it go? What's the contract say? Who can access this information?
Well, we know that in this country, in Australia, one of the reasons why the government was against having Huawei, which is a Chinese company, taking part in the 5G network was because of the very thing you're talking about. So one way or another, it might be that all the information which comes either through photographs or technology or just by giving your phone number could be leading back to somewhere
Absolutely.
Where it shouldn't be going.
Exactly.
I'm not suggesting it's China, it could be anybody.
Absolutely, could be anybody. And it could be more than one entity. It could be multiple entities,
yeah.
Right? I mean, let's say, you know, you have to bunny hop two or three different companies or businesses, you know, one that actually puts up the infrastructure, one that actually gathers and collates and stores the information, and then somebody else who, I don't know, might have a share or an interest in that company. God only knows where all this stuff goes. Okay. And we've got a mayor, deputy mayor, and councillors on council who are basically saying you're being a conspiracy theorist to even be concerned about where your information goes. Now, incidentally, there is actually technology. Now, do not ask me where I saw this because I'm going to have to backtrack. It'll take me a little bit of time to find it. But the technology is already out there whereby you go past a particular camera or a sensor, and I don't know if it's in lights just yet, but the technologies are so advanced, lights actually now also have cameras in them as well. And the moment you cross that threshold, it will literally pick up everything in your mobile phone, telephone contacts, emails, photographs, you name it, literally everything, not just in your telephone, but also in your smartwatch and in your laptop. If you walk through with your laptop, right? Anything and everything. So you've got, let's say, hypothetically, I don't know, you've got a patent on a discovery or an invention or something. It's no longer yours. Goodbye, Charlie. Okay? That goes off into the ether. Anybody can collect that information and you don't know what's going to... How would you like it if your competitor got access to that information? I don't know, you're designing a special new car, okay? And your competitor gets that design and that blueprint and everything that's stored in your smart device.
There's a couple of problems associated with this, aren't there?
Mm.
There are a lot of older people in our community who don't have a smartphone, who don't yeah. want a smartphone, don't like the idea of having a smartphone, but it seems more and more if you don't have a smartphone, you can't do all the things that you want to do.
That's right. That's right. And my daughter, Grace, when she was first introduced to council and she had to set up her email system, she was kind of compelled, if you like, strongly encouraged to use Face ID for security reasons. Well, she used Face ID once and that completely corrupted her entire personal mobile phone, which she used for work, right? Everything in that mobile phone was lost and destroyed. The phone immobilized. To this day, she can't access her council emails. There have been various problems with that. But notwithstanding that, she's had to go out and buy another mobile phone. How she's going to ever get any of that other information retrieved, I have no idea. But she went to the highest tech people And they said it was so unusual that it actually was hijacked. And then she ended up having several hundreds of dollars taken out of her personal bank account in separate transactions, all after that one incident, that one time that she used Face ID.
So, in other words, her identity was stolen, not just by Absolutely. Having her Face ID That's through right. the phone, but they were actually able to get into That's right. her phone.
And you're talking about a councillor, an elected official. Now, you tell me that if you're a councillor, let's say, or an employee in council, a staff member in the council, and somebody doesn't like the work that you're doing, do you tell me that they couldn't have you compromised in a microsecond when they access, I don't know, phone records, photographs, I don't know, you're seen to be talking to somebody that they don't approve of, and they blackmail you with that information? I don't know. God only knows, Mike, what could happen. And the potential to compromise councillors or public officials is endless, enormous.
Well, on that note, Matilda, we're going to go to another short break, and we'll come back and we'll go back to where we started, and that is talking smart.
Thank you.
Give me a minute with TNT Radio's Steve Malzberg.
Gallup is out with brand new poll results on Americans' attitudes towards the Middle East, and some of the numbers are not good at all. Remember back in October of last year when former President Trump warned American Jews they had better get their act together and realize what they have in Israel before it's too late, noting that evangelical support for the Jewish state outpaced that of Jews in America. For that legitimate concern, Trump was labeled an anti-Semite by the ADL, the White House, and media. Of course he was. The aforementioned groups are made up mostly of Democrats, and Gallup has found that Democrats sympathize more with the Palestinians than the Israelis, 49% to 38%. That's an 11-point increase in Democrat support for the Palestinians in the past year. And to Trump's point, it's worth noting that some 70% of Jews in America lean Democrat. Independents are more sympathetic to Israel, 49 to 32%, but that's up 6 points for the Palestinians. Republicans, they're 80% to 11% in favor of Israel. Overall, the Palestinians register a new high of 31% support, while the 54% of Americans sympathizing more with the Israelis, that's the lowest since 2005. And you can thank the Dems and the biased anti-Israel media for those numbers. Thanks for giving me a minute. I'm Steve Malzberg for TNT Radio.
Think tsunamis only happen somewhere else? Think again. Tsunamis happen when ocean water is displaced by an earthquake or other large undersea disturbance. Plan to act. If you are near the coast and feel a quake, hear the ocean roar, or see the water recede significantly, a tsunami may be approaching. Get moving. Go inland and up to safety. For more information, visit tsunami.gov.
If you're talking about it,
playing games with the debt ceiling is dangerous and would spell disaster.
We're talking about
today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
And also, we're on Politically Incorrect, wherever you may be all around the world, the morning, afternoon, midday, even midnight. This is the place to be. We've got Matilda Borden, a social worker with many years' experience from Adelaide in Australia, who's been absolutely barreled with criticism at times, and on the other hand, she's given them back too. You've had a few barrels of criticism towards a lot of public figures, haven't you, Matilda? What do you think has been your best success in terms of bringing to the fore something which not only you felt very clearly desperate about, but also has had a great public benefit?
Wow, that's a difficult question to answer.
That's why I asked it.
Well, I mean, you know, looking back on, you know, I guess my experiences as a young social worker, unwittingly stumbling across the Scheme Critical List. For those people who don't know what it is, you can look up Hansard in the South Australian Parliament. The Scheme Critical List, which incidentally has morphed into some other variation, if you like, probably two or three different variations. It's a hit list of all the legal cases that will never succeed before any court in any jurisdiction, federal or state, because the judges are already informed how they must decide. So if you think you're going to get any justice in this state, good luck to you.
You're talking locally? In where you live in South Australia?
We discovered it here in South Australia, but it doesn't only operate in South Australia. It operates everywhere. You can guarantee it's in Queensland, it's in New South Wales, it's in Victoria. Trust me, before you even go to court, if you're up against the state, those judges already know who's coming and what they must decide. You can look up the Hansard. You can look up the Hansard. This is not a conspiracy theory. It was a conspiracy theory until we uncovered the document that proved it, and it actually made it to the SBS Insight program, which you can find on my website. You can get the transcript.
So this is a reality, is it?
Absolutely, absolutely. You know, all these court cases that people have been trying to put through, you know, on the question of mandates and COVID and stuff. Bank on it. It's all on a scheme critical list somewhere.
Well, you of course you were hit with a prohibition to even talk about things such as vaccine, weren't you?
Even though I'm actually not covered by the legislation, I'm actually the social worker that is, quote, exempt under the Act. But you're going to punish me anyway. So, okay, if you're going to punish me, well, I'm going to speak. And you know what? I'm going to speak louder than I did before. Because I'm not going away and I'm rusted on. And you want to punish me with 2 years jail and $10,000 fine? Knock yourself out. Go your hardest, because I'm ready to do the time. But, you know, it'll be mutually assured destruction.
Well, let's go back to the question I raised. What do you think is the most influential piece of criticism that you've raised against any particular issue that's happened in the last couple of years?
I think it's just constantly highlighting how easy corruption is to get away with. It's easy to contrive, it's easy to coordinate, it's easy to set up systems and get away with it.
And to what extent do you think that is orchestrated for some time prior to it actually coming to fruition?
Oh, be assured. The networks are already there. I mean, in this day and age, it's all too easy. Look, I was a very highly trained public servant back in the 80s. Back in the 1980s, I was trained in the administrative procedures for being a Commonwealth public servant. And I have to say that training no longer exists. It hasn't existed probably since around about the 1990s. So public servants are not trained in the absolute strictest rules of what it means to be a public servant and the things you can and can't do, because everything goes now. You know, it doesn't really matter. You breach someone's privacy, who cares? I mean, I've got a clear-cut case where the NDIA, National Disability Insurance Agency, deliberately and knowingly breached the privacy of a family. There's nothing you can do to hold them to account. You can go to your privacy commissioner, you can complain all you like, you won't so much as get an acknowledgement, and God forbid you should get an apology. Right? But there used to be a time when, for example, I remember working in the Department of Health, and I was a project officer in the disability services section. And I was effectively an auditor of these disability service providers back in the day. And if you had a ministerial cross your desk, God help you, everybody dreaded the day a ministerial would cross their desk. And people would go into a sheer panic at the notion of a ministerial. Because back then, if a ministerial crossed your desk, you were in a whole pile of trouble. And if you couldn't explain to the minister what you did and how you did it and how you justified it, you were as good as gone. You would either get demoted or there would be some serious consequence. These days, forget it. Doesn't really matter. You don't answer an FOI in 28 days, well, who cares? You don't answer an FOI in 5 years, it doesn't really matter. There's no consequence, right? But back in the 1980s, I remember, people would break out into a sweat.
And so what's caused the great change in the way things have been done?
Lots of corruption, I think. Lots of corruption, you know, favours for mates, giving people cushy jobs. I mean, I remember one time working in a department where I took over someone else's role. And for not just weeks but many months, people would say, where's this letter? What happened to that report? Where did this file go? And things just were missing, you know. And I remember one of the big bosses at the top came walked straight up to my desk one day And he said, Matilda, why can't I find the papers on this file? Where are all the papers? Well, I just took over the job and I couldn't tell him why the papers weren't on that file and where they'd gone. And I became what's known as a former papers officer, which I think if you ever watched the Dead Letter Office movie, the Dead Letter, I think it was called the Dead Letter Office. These were documents with no name or date or time or place that you could attach to find a file for. Well, I was that person. I was the person that would find that letter and match it up to the right file. Well, I later discovered that the person who did the job before me, when he couldn't find the file, he'd just throw them under a drawer somewhere. Well, we uncovered this box of papers, and fortunately, I was able to match them all up with the right file. But we've lost the technique. We've lost the technique of how to do the job. Everything's automated these days, but I'm telling you, if the computer systems crash tomorrow, I could tell you how to find a document, right? We've lost that skill in the public sector. And the notion of accountability, well, I don't think anybody's even trained in that stuff.
So what you're saying is they've lost the skill of finding a document, but they haven't lost the skill of losing one.
Exactly. Well put. Well put.
Yeah. Well, let's go back a bit. What do you think is the greatest success you've had personally or with other people fighting the good fight against this area of corruption or difficulties with getting anywhere? In other words, you've dealt with a lot of people who have got problems, let's just call them problems overall. Let's not go into individual cases, where they find it difficult to get anywhere. Where do you think your work has achieved something for those people?
I think maybe it's in the fact that now I know that if people have particular problems, word of mouth around town gets around and somebody will send me those cases, those really, really complex cases where I have to literally forensically unscramble the egg of whatever mess has been done. And then I can write to their lawyers and their barristers, their legal team of, okay, well, you know, here is where your problem originated. Do you know what I mean? I can dissect that stuff. And the fact that I think I'm vindicated enough now in the community, and I've been around the traps 30 odd years, that I'm not written off as being the fruitcake or the nutbag that once upon a time I probably would have been. Now, I think people would probably call me a conspiracy theorist very, very reluctantly, or maybe tongue in cheek, but I don't think I'm easily dismissed anymore. So in terms of success, is that a success? Maybe. I don't know. But I think I have regained the credibility that I think once upon a time the authorities would have hoped I'd lost.
And where do you think you go from here, Matilda?
Oh, I'm just going to keep doing what I've been
doing.
What's
the most pressing problem in
front of you?
Educating
people. Educating people.
Yeah.
Educating, yep, and continuing to expose all this nonsense. You know, where there's a lack of transparency, again, peel back the curtains and watch the vampires disappear, right? And I'm telling you, there are plenty of vampires hiding out in these councils, in these local government councils. But, you know, and thankfully I'm not alone anymore. You know, there used to be a time when the battle seemed to be only mine and I was the only one doing it. But now I know that there's an army of people that are out there. You know, it's a wonderful, wonderful army of people that are sharing information. I don't have to struggle now to pick up the phone and go, okay, I need some advice. Who am I going to call? Because I've got that telephone tree. I know the people that I need to be in touch with and people who will share information with me and vice versa. I can share information and we get it out. And that used to be difficult. That used to be really, really difficult.
Well, you've certainly managed to overcome a lot of those problems that you were faced with trying to find out information and so forth.
Absolutely.
So you think you've won that battle. You're certainly winning the battle.
I think we're winning the battle. And I think we'll know that we've won the battle when finally heads start to roll and there's some accountability.
Yeah.
And my mission right now is to make sure that the city of Salisbury is held accountable for the way that they are actually abusing their power and authority. This notion that they have already consulted with the public about smart cities is a big, gigantic, monumental lie.
Yeah, it's interesting, isn't it? I know that in a lot of countries, and particularly here in Australia, and where I am, which is in Queensland, You know, we're being watched all the time.
Yeah.
At every time you stop at a stoplight, you can be photographed. If your mobile phone is actually on you, or in police terms is on the person, you can be fined on the basis that you're using it, even though you're not.
That's exactly right. That's right.
And those fines are not small. They're $1,000 a pop. And for people who can't afford to pay those fines, if they want to fight it because they know that they're being badly treated in terms of a photograph misleading the truth of the matter, they've got to find somehow to fight it, and it's going to cost more than the fine.
That's right. And you see, this is what councils are banking on. They're never going to have to worry about what happens to you when your privacy or your human rights are breached. You're going to just, good luck, see if you can find a lawyer who will help you fight that fight. Good luck and see if you can afford to fight that fight. If you can, you know, spend $20,000, $30,000, $50,000 to lay it on the table and get a barrister or somebody to take it to a Supreme Court or a High Court where you could potentially win that battle or argue your case, right? But this notion that somehow all these security cameras and security devices, et cetera, are making us safer, well, I'm sorry, but in China, they've got that pretty much everywhere. They've got the social credit score happening, the whole nine yards, and yet you've got they're trafficking in children. They're trafficking in the sex industry. You know, human trafficking. They're trafficking in organ body parts, all that kind of stuff. And of course, they can traffic because they know exactly where to find everybody that they need.
And what do you think about this idea of the hedge toward? Well, that's probably the wrong word, but the movement towards a cashless society using the so-called smart technology.
Well, that's the absolute final nail in our coffin. That's where I think we pretty much burn the Constitution and say goodbye to our sovereignty, bodily or national or otherwise. You know, this is where we become owned by the corporations, the councils, the politicians, you know. Yeah, and that's really troubling.
What do we do about it, Matilda?
What do we do about it? Resist as much as we know how. But I think we've got to start eradicating the corruption that's already there. I think that's what we do about it. We start holding people to account. And I think, you know, if the judges won't do it, and the judges are not doing it.
Yeah. What about, have you thought about the idea of, you might remember when the Bee Gees were thought to be just a dance band, and everybody, that DJ in England decided to have a big concert and asked everybody to bring all their Bee Gees music, and he had a big bonfire in the middle of the arena. quite misleading and deceptive it was, but what about having a similar thing where everybody brings their smartphone and tosses it in the fire?
Well, I like that idea. I like that idea. Yeah, I think we're going to have to find other alternative creative ways to do business.
We'd have to go back to writing letters, wouldn't we? And what do we do then? Do we rely on the post office?
Fortunately, I'm good at writing letters, apparently. So,
but you need to be able to post them and get them delivered. That's another problem, isn't it? I don't know what it's like
in
other parts of the world, but I think the idea of having emails is the way that everybody communicates now, isn't it?
Yes, it is.
Very little people take the time to write a letter.
Look, you know, I'm not opposed to technology. I never have been. I'm not opposed to smartphones per se. What I'm opposed to is the lack of accountability, the lack of transparency, and the lack of input and say that you and I have, because we're not stakeholders. You know, under the World Economic Forum's future for us, we are not stakeholders. We don't matter. Our lives don't matter.
Matilda, the problem is that there are a lot of people who are trained, that is, lobbied and then brainwashed into believing what they're being told.
You're right.
And there are others like yourself who not only doesn't believe it, but finds a way to try and tell people not to believe it. So there we are. How are we going to solve this whole problem?
I think we are solving it. We are in real time. This mass awakening is, I think we're at the stage where surely we are pretty well right at the critical mass. You know, I think we have got that critical mass. And like I said, we're getting lots of groups now forming in each council area here in South Australia, where people, whether it's with council's blessing or consent, we don't need their blessing or consent to educate each other. And we're not reliant on council to inform us of anything. We're educating each other, you know.
Right. Well, all the people through your social work who have benefited by your fight, if I can put it that way, they must be very happy with some of the way in which you've moved them forward. So let's hope it continues to occur in not just those who have got disabilities or those who you look after as a social worker, but in the general community. So thanks very much for coming on today. We've got to go, unfortunately.
Mike.
We've got to leave here. We'll go to a news bulletin soon. Just a couple of seconds left for you to say what you'd really like to say on Politically Incorrect today.
Well, if you haven't already connected up to the equivalent of a NOSCAG group or No Smart Cities Action Group in your area, if you haven't connected to one, start one. Start one up. And I'm happy to help you organise one.
Well, I'm sure people can get in touch with you, Matilda, on your website.
Too easy.
Just Google Matilda Borden. Thanks very much for your company this afternoon, in the morning, in the middle of the night, wherever those people are listening can be. And we'll see you next time.
Bless you. Bye.